Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. Time for a segment called Dave's Got Guests. And I do have a wonderful guest with me talking to me about opera and theater. I don't really get to talk about opera very much on this program. I think most of you might remember when I had Stefan Zucker, the opera fanatic.
Oh, sure.
Yes, and you're. Oh, I can hear my guest Joyce Castle already knows who that is, so maybe we'll talk a little about him. Very interesting fellow and really nice guy, actually. But yes, my guest is Joyce Castle, who is a mezzo-soprano, and she will explain what that is. She'll also explain the difference, hopefully, between operatic theater and opera, because she is doing both at the moment. She's simultaneously appearing in two different things, one at Lincoln Center, one at City Opera, and I'm going to let Joyce Castle take it away and tell us all about it. Joyce, hey.
Thanks. Hi, Dave. Oh, well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you.
Actually, both of the shows are at Lincoln Center, so I only have to go across the plaza to get to the other theater. I'm at Lincoln Center in New York, at the New York State Theater, and at New York City Opera, doing Poulenc's Dialogues of the Carmelites. That's the opera, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Lincoln Center Theater, at the smaller theater downstairs, you know, the Mitzi
Newhouse.
Yeah. I'm doing this new piece of Martha Clark's called Belle Époque, which is the life and times of, showing the life and times of Toulouse-Lautrec.
And what do you play in that? Because you're not Toulouse-Lautrec in that, obviously. Well, you never know with Martha Clark, but yeah.
Oh, dear, that's good. That's well said. But, oh, it's going to be wonderful. It's like a dream of Toulouse-Lautrec. We have Mark Povinelli singing, playing the role of Lautrec. And then you see, in Martha Clark's piece called Belle Époque, all these characters you have seen in his posters.
Oh, cool.
So you see the dancers, and you see, you will, the audience will recognize from the way they look on stage and their costumes and so forth. I think they will, anyway. The dancer who was called Valentin, and there was another dancer called Chocolat. And I am doing the cabaret singer. I'm doing cabaret songs of the period, especially the songs that were sung by Yvette Guilbert. And again, a character that he loved very much. He liked her looks. She was a quirky-looking thing, skinny, red hair. Well, I guess they all had red hair piled on top of her head, and long black gloves, and he painted her many times. We even have recordings of Yvette Guilbert, so that's been pretty interesting, because I can listen to what she sounds like and then try to sort of, you know, give the impression.
Was she a mezzo?
Oh, well, you know, when I'm singing in Belle Époque, I'm just a singer, you know, like a cabaret singer. I wear many hats in my career. I've done a lot of opera, yes, but I've also done a lot of so-called crossover music theater pieces, a lot of Bernstein, for instance, a lot of Kurt Weill. And I've done a lot of French cabaret songs. I have a little program that I've done several places of songs of the period, because they're just catchy little verse songs. They're fun for the audience. They're a little saucy, of course, because they were in the cabarets. But
and you do them in French, or do you translate and then sing?
Well, yeah, we're doing most of them in a translation of Michael Feingold, terrific translator. And so there will be a little bit in French, but most of it will be in English with a few little words of French in there to give the character of the piece.
Now, you've done quite a bit, when you say of crossover into theater, you've worked with some of the more avant-garde leading lights of theater, including in your resume, people like Richard Foreman and Bogart and Joanne Acolytis. Is there a particular reason that you gravitated to that kind of work rather than, say, more mainstream commercial Broadway theater, or just sort of happened that way?
Those, I don't know. I was cast.
Okay.
I was cast in the case of Anne Bogart. It was downtown with Lynn Austin, Lynn Austin's music theater group, and so that was a very bizarre version of Cinderella that Anne Bogart.
Okay.
Directed. Richard Foreman directed a sort of an opera, although, wow, it was really music theater, called Where's Dick, which we did at Playwrights Horizon, and then he directed it at Houston Grand Opera.
Wow, okay.
So it just comes about. Eric Simonson from Steppenwolf last year directed Handmaid's Tale, which is an opera. Which I did with Minnesota Opera, Tazewell Thompson right now at City Opera. He's very well known, perhaps more well known in theater. I think I would say I'm lucky to be cast with him.
well, Thompson's directing Carmelites, right?
Right.
At City Opera.
Yes.
And you play the prioress in that. And if people aren't familiar with Dialogue of the Carmelites, and I admit I'm not, so
yeah.
It was a little pricey of what that show is.
Dialogue of the Carmelites is the story based on a true story. During the French Revolution, there was an order of Carmelite nuns north of Paris who took the vow of martyrdom for the peace of the country, and they were turned out of their orders. They were not allowed to say mass and so forth. They were not allowed to wear their garments, and they went to the guillotine instead of as martyrs. 16, absolutely true story. And 10 days later, the revolution was over.
Wow.
So in a way, some people think that it worked, but you see that in the in this opera. It's, oh my goodness, it is quite a dramatic story. I don't go to the guillotine. I play the role of the old prioress in the first act, and she is very, very ill, and the end of the first act is a 20-minute unbelievable scene of dying.
You get a 20-minute death scene?
20-minute death scene.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And
it is.
Some people say it's the finest scene written in 20th century opera. It's a jewel of a piece of writing, if you see what I mean.
And was it necessary to find a show that where you were done by the first act so you could get to Belle Epoque, or they're not jiving? Well, you know, it's kind of...
I love that question. That's great.
let me die a little quicker because they need me across
Thank
the screen.
Thank you for saying that. I must say it helped in the rehearsal period.
Well, there was that... the last time people have really talked about this was with, of all people, Cynthia Nixon, before she was famous. One of her first big moments was when she was appearing in Hurley Burley.
Oh, I see.
And she was doing another role at the same time, three blocks away on Broadway.
Mm.
And literally, she would like scoot. I don't know how she did it, but she managed it somehow. Because I think she only showed up in Hurley Burley for like 10 minutes here and 5 minutes there.
Oh,
and
well.
And she'd run, you know, and change at the other theater.
Well, that's in both shows in theater. In this case, this is one show in a theater, Belle Epoque. And opera, of course, we can't do every night. We only have 6 performances, and so I'm just missing some rehearsal tonight. I will miss I will do the first premiere. Oh, I said it wrong. Preview.
Mm-hmm.
I will do the first preview of Belle Epoque. The second night, an understudy will sing Belle Epoque, while I do the last performance of Dialogues of the Carmelites.
So,
and then I'll take over for the rest of the show, rest of the run of Belle Epoque.
Now, you have, but you're appearing at City Opera now, but you have done quite a few roles at the Met.
And also, yes.
Yeah, and I'm kind of wondering about the first time that you appeared there, because that sort of, it's like La Scala. I mean, there's just something about the Met.
Yes, there is.
So was any memories of that very first show you were doing there, or that first night you stepped out on the Metropolitan Opera stage?
Yes, there's a memory of City Opera, too.
Okay.
But at the Met, I was in the new production then, it was 1986, of the New Ring. Well, it isn't new anymore, but that was the New Ring.
It was when New and Wagner wrote it, yeah.
And I was the Waltraut in Valtira.
Mm-hmm.
And that was extremely exciting, of course, to be at the Met with James Levine conducting. And I remember standing backstage before I ran in on my first entrance, the sound of the unbelievable orchestra at the Met. You know, that is just a jam, and that was very thrilling. I also remember the first rehearsal I had at the Met. I remember going up on the set and turning back out and looking out at the house. I said, "Whoa, okay." Same thing at City Opera. When you get the job and you're on that stage for the first time. Same thing, Paris Opera. First time I was there, these fine concert halls and Seattle Opera and so many at the Kennedy Center. The first time I appeared there, I'm not blasé. I don't know. That's good. I hope I don't lose that, because it's very exciting for me. Theater is very exciting. Singing's.
Let me ask you, you had mentioned before that your scene in Dialogue of the Carmelites, that big, you know, long-lasting, wonderful death scene, is considered one of the best scenes in modern contemporary opera. And yet there still seems to be a schism between sort of the Verdi and the Rossini and the Puccini, and then everything else that came after them. I mean, they try, and you get maybe Porgy and Bess, and maybe Sweeney Todd. But do you think there's ever going to be that kind of bridge where people will accept? And I'm not sure I do, because I don't like a lot of the modern music that's coming through. But what do you think, can it happen where these modern things become as much a part of the canon as La Bohème or La Traviata or Die Walküre, you know?
Isn't that a question? Because we don't know what's going to happen in 50 years or 100 years, and wouldn't it be interesting if these operas that we're doing right now are the mainstream then too? I can say I've been associated with so many 20th century works. I like to do them. They're very often they're very dramatic. I like to do modern pieces. I'm not afraid of hard music. So I have been attached with a lot of them. I can say that they go over, very often they go over very, very well. This Handmaid's Tale, you know the movie and the book, but wow, this was a ride. It was a great success, I'll say, in Minneapolis. I've done Dominic Argento operas. The Casanova that I did at City Opera was very well, you know, it was a big success. Vanessa, of course, I've done. Lulu, well, Lulu's in the Met. I've done Susanna at Carlisle Floyd. We did Susanna at the Met, and that's in the...
So there's a niche. They're sort of making their own little niche into the canon.
Yes, I'm going to do Jake Hagee's End of the Affair next fall in Seattle. He's, of course, written Dead Man Walking, which has gotten a lot of performances. And then, of course, I've done a lot of Benjamin Britten. Those are, surely they will be mainstays in 50, 75 years. I was so fortunate to be able to do Gloriana at Central City Opera. That's the role of Elizabeth I of England.
Oh, cool. Since I brought up Stefan Zucker before, one of the questions that he would ask on his long-running opera show when it was on WKCR, He had literally a poll taken of like the greatest tenor of the century.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And people were writing, oh, yeah, did you ever appear on Stepan's show?
I didn't. I just know about him. I've heard something of his, and I've seen, of course, many of his articles.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's amazing.
I'm sure.
And to talk to him is a trick.
He knows everything, doesn't he, about opera.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's also the way he does it. He makes it a lot of fun in a very odd and interesting way.
Mm-hmm,
and that was the joy of his show.
Great.
And one of the things that kept the interest was every week you'd get entries of why they thought Carlo Bergonzi or Jussi Björling or Pavarotti was the greatest tenor of the century, and then he'd read why and explain, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you, do you have a greatest tenor and or soprano and or mezzo-soprano of, well, not this century, but of the last one?
Mm. Well, Björling is oh so high for me. I just, I love my recordings of him.
And Corelli was pretty big on the program. He was
Corelli
discovery, yeah.
Fantastic, yes. And I was lucky enough to hear him in a few things with Birgit.
Wow.
Wonderful. I like I like Pavarotti too, and Domingo. I can't choose.
Do you have any specific reasons that would be more technically singer-y than your average person listening? Because, you know, Pavarotti is extremely popular, of course.
Pavarotti, you know what, I teach some also. The University of Kansas, I have an artist-in-residence position, and I'm always suggesting if they want to know anything about Italian diction, go listen to Luciano, because you can just write it down. And I love it when you can it's very important for me, for my audiences to understand me. So important, I think, is diction. So I think he's wonderful. It's just a wonderful sound. It's a wonderful sound. And Domingo, the range that man has sung, this is quite a musician intellect, and
of course
he seems to be able to do it all, doesn't he?
And what about the ladies?
Oh well, mezzos. Of course, that's my voice. I love Krista Ludwig and Janet Baker were very high on my list. Giulietta Simeonato. For a great Italian coloratura, not that I'm a coloratura singer, but it's inspiring. If you get a singer, no matter what voice they are, that's inspiring for you, that's great. I listen, want to talk sopranos? Okay, I listen to Kirsten Flagstad.
Okay.
And wow, that's a voice that just... magnificent voice that can just soar over the orchestra. I like to listen to Joan Sutherland. I heard her on stage too.
Wow.
For her unbelievable trills, coloratura, high notes. Not my voice, but doesn't matter. You know, it's so inspiring, and I like to. You know, I'm a singer, but I like to go and listen to singers too.
Of course,
and I like.
Yeah, sorry.
I just like to color the voice, too, so that I can do other roles. That's why I was able to do a lot of Mrs. Lovett's. And I call myself a fake belter.
You brought up another name that we've heard of, more than heard of, Leonard Bernstein.
Oh, boy, I have so many memories of Lenny.
Oh, wow.
I really do. I was at Tanglewood first. That was my first job. I was at a music theater project up there doing Ligeti and Kleine Mahogany. Gunther Schuller was up there. It was a big time. Lenny was coming to my shows, and he was very appreciative of my work, would talk to me about it. Then, much later, I started doing Candides at City Opera, so I did The Old Lady, and I'm the old lady in the New World Record of Candide. And so he knew me from that. I had sung on the Bernstein London Symphony Orchestra big bash that they did for him, sang Old Lady for him. I remember that very well because he came backstage and he saw me across the green room, and I'm a very tall lady, and Lenny was not the tallest man, right?
Okay.
And he said, "Joyce, Joyce." And then he said, "No, wait, I need this." He pulled a chair over and stood on it to congratulate me. That was a memory.
He was a showman.
I was chosen to sing arias and barcaroles, and we rehearsed with him, and he played the piano and Michael Tilson Thomas in Lenny's apartment in the Dakota for a week.
Oh, wow.
That was quite an experience.
And any other cute memories of stuff he did or moments where you learned something from him?
Well, I'll tell you, he smoked all the way through those rehearsals, and no one told him to put that cigarette out.
I assume as a singer you do not smoke.
No. I must have I've never been in the presence of someone with more energy. It is just like it was a ball of fire energy in the room. It was very exciting.
Let me ask you, I mentioned the cigarette before, but also we think of especially opera singers, not so much theater people, even though they have to stay in shape and take classes and movement, but we really think of opera people having very constricted sort of lives that are, they're constantly protecting their voices and all that. Do you have these regimens and the you know, hours and hours of practice every day? And,
no.
And you have to
No. I try to stay as I've sung for a very long time, of course, by now.
Mm-hmm.
I have to take care of myself. I have to stay healthy, try to do exercise, I have to have sleep. Just to sing well, I need my sleep. But I don't want to get too regimented about not eating such and such and not doing this. I take care of myself, I'll say it that way.
And,
to be too scared of it, I think, might be counterproductive.
Hmm.
I think to be more at ease with your life, I certainly don't mean I'm going to go out and drink a lot and certainly don't smoke, you see what I, but...
But I mean, moderation, but you're not like walking around with a muffler around your neck.
No.
And drinking tea with honey, you know, once every hour kind of thing.
No, no. Actually, I drink Diet Coke caffeine-free backstage. It's pitiful. It's true.
I just got a free plug. That's really neat. Let me give a free plug also to the two shows that you are in, both, as you said, at Lincoln Center. You're in Dialogue of the Carmelites at New York City Opera, and that's only six performances, because, you know, as you said, operas are not every single day.
Yeah.
But many more performances of Belle Époque, which is a collaboration between Martha Clark and Charles L. Mee doing the text, and that is at the Mitzi Newhouse Theater, the little theater in the Lincoln Center Theater. Your career is continuing, and you're singing, and how long... I mean, you know, there's a certain point when opera people or even theater people have to sort of think about stopping. And then others, no, they just go ahead or they do recitals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is you know, your point on that level?
I think when the health goes, don't you?
Okay, cool.
I think it's about health. It's also about health of the voice. I've sung over 30 years. I've kept, I've certainly been... working on my voice all that time to try to keep it not to push it, you see, so that it's healthy now. It has remained healthy. I'm thankful for that.
Well, yes.
And I listen to myself on tape recorders. When I hear that I don't like it, I'll probably stop. I hope so, sure. But I'm a mezzo. So that's the lower woman's voice, of course. And we are chosen, we are cast to do the roles of mothers and grandmothers and the older people on the stage, or witches, or men, or...
or Valkyries, you're right.
Sorceresses.
Right.
You see, I am not, no one has ever thought of me as the sweet young thing, ingenue.
That's okay. People never thought of me as that either.
Okay.
I've learned to live with that, you know.
Well, I'm very lucky that way. I can go on as long as I can.